Yasuo Chabukvura and the Sphere that were granted to me.
Oh. Okay. And he was Nifter.
He was Nifter. I knew him. He was when I was about 16 when he died.
Okay.
Grandfather.
Okay. We were in the Gemara. In the Gemara that we saw last time, which was before Pesach, so it seems like a very long time ago. And it seems like a lifetime ago that we were all together before, I don't even remember when the last time we all met in person. I think it was before Purim. So it's a very long time already. But the Gemara was discussing in the Psukim for Malchiot in Rosh Hashanah, we're on Daf Lamed Beis Amud Beis. The Gemara was discussing which are the appropriate Psukim for Malchiot to discuss God's kingship in the Musaf of Rosh Hashanah. The problem is, in terms of Psukim for Chumash, in the end we conclude, of course, there are three Psukim from Torah, three Psukim from Tehillim, three Psukim from Nevi'im, and a final 10th concluding pasuk from Torah. There aren't that many psukim in the Torah that use the word melech in reference to God himself. So you have to kind of stretch it a little bit. And the Gemara suggests the idea, or it entertains the idea, which happens to be the halacha lemaisa, that Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad is like the ultimate pasuk of Malchiot. So, Rav Huttner in the Pachad Yitzchak. There's Rav Huttner. So you all know who Rav Huttner was. Rav Huttner was a Rosh Hashiva in Chaim Berlin in New York, and then towards the end of his life he came in Aliyah and lived in Yerushalayim, and he was the author of a multi-volume work called the Pachad Yitzchak. On a very, very significant work, among the most significant works of Jewish thought, published in the latter part of the 20th century. So in Pachad Yitzchak, in Rosh Hashanah, volume, Torah number 11, I mean, chapter 11, he says the following. In other words, the Gemara had said that the source for saying Malchiot is Ani Hashem, Ani Hashem Elokeichem. The Gemara said that is the source for the idea that you have to say Malchiot. So if the idea that the source for Malchiot is a pasuk that itself doesn't contain the word melech, just the declaration, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, I am the Lord your God. So what's the havamina that Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad is not good enough as one of the psukim of Malchiot, even though, admittedly, it doesn't have the word Melech contained in it. On the other side, when we say Kriyat Shema, so there's an obligation to recite Kriyat Shema. When we recite Kriyat Shema, we're doing multiple things. There are various kiyumim that are accomplished through the recitation of these three paragraphs. Of course, at the end of the Shema, we discussed it last 2 weeks ago around the Seder table. We have Zechirat Yetziat Mitzrayim. Ani Hashem Elokeichem, Asher Hotzeiti Etchem Me'eretz Mitzrayim, Lekem Elokim, Ani Hashem Elokeichem Emet. We have Kabbalat Ol Mitzvot, that we accept upon ourselves the obligations of being a commanded person. And we also have Kabbalat Ol Malchut Shemayim, recognizing God's sovereignty in the world. And the Pasuk Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad is the Kabbalat Ol Malchut Shemayim. In other words, inherent in that pasuk is a recognition of God's kingship over the world. Even though the word melech isn't there. But it's as if the pasuk says, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu Malkeinu Hashem Echad.
We also, Chazal also tie it in, sure, at least the Siddur ties in Shema Yisrael with Baruch Hashem Kavod Malchuto Le'olam Ve'ed.
Correct. So it's just so implicit in the pasuk that it goes without saying. But Chazal say that if you say Kriya Shema, if you say the pasuk Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu, and you leave off Hashem Echad, so obviously Hashem Echad is very important because it's a statement of our monotheistic beliefs. But doesn't the part of the pasuk that just says Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu, isn't that itself Kabbalat Ol Malchut Shemayim? I mean, maybe not lechatchila because you have to say the whole pasuk, but b'di'eved, wouldn't that be a fulfillment of Kabbalat Ol Malchut Shemayim just to say Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu? Because after all, what's the obligation for Rosh Hashanah for the purpose of reciting the Malchiot? What's the pasuk hamichayev? Ani Hashem Elokeichem, right? The pasuk isn't Ani Hashem Elokeichem Echad. And as you'd be missing out on the affirmant of God being Echad, but saying Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu should be enough, at least b'di'evit, to have fulfilled Ol Malchut Shemayim. But yet the Gemara says that if you say the pasuk without Hashem Echad, you have not fulfilled Kabbalat Ol Malchut Shemayim, because Hashem Elokeinu isn't enough. Even though the pasuk which obligates us in Malchiot is Ani Hashem Elokeichem.
Is it in the Gemara?
That is in the Gemara, and this is the question that Rav Huttner puts forth. Right? So in other words, how could Ani Hashem Elokeichem be a sufficient Michayev for reciting Malchiot if those words alone don't constitute Malchiot? So Rav Huttner says,
Jeff, is it possible just to look for a second at the words in the Gemara?
The words in the Gemara, I don't have them on the screen. But here, Rav Huttner doesn't quote it here, but take my word for it. V'kan higanu l'tochen ha-hevdel, ha-havdala, bein kabbalat ol malchut shamayim, t'shma Yisrael.
Where are you in Rav Huttner?
Here, I'm sorry, let me fix it for you. Okay, you see it now?
Yeah.
Okay. This is Pachad Yitzchak, Rosh Hashanah, chapter 11. Sif Dalit. Rav Huttner sometimes sometimes the chapters run long, and sometimes there's a bit of repetition, which is probably the function of the fact that every single piece originated as an oral presentation, which was then written down, not always by him. He wasn't always the first author. He was the first originator, but it was written down. So it went, the transition from Devarim Shebaal Peh to Devarim Shebichtav sometimes left in a certain amount of repetition. So he says, Kan higanu l'tochen havdala ben kabbalat ol malchut shamayim de shema Yisrael, uven kabbalat ol malchut shamayim de amirat malchiot. So he says, there's a difference between the kabbalat ol malchut shamayim of shema Yisrael, which requires us to say Hashem Echad, and the obligation of Malchiot as part of the Musaf of Rosh Hashanah. Dehamamlacha, the crowning of God, the Amirat Malchiot, Lamadnu mi ani Hashem Elokeichem. Dehainu, Hamlacha nimshechet b'shnei kavim. The crowning of HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the king that we're participating in on Rosh Hashanah is this kind of ongoing endeavor that takes place on two parallel planes. Havaya ve'elokut. Havaya is Shem Hashem, Yud-Kei, Vav-Kei. And Elokut, God as the Lord. Shehi hamamlacha shel hayom hazeh. Leumat zot, kabalat ol malchut shamayim de kriyat shema, mitkayemet dafka mitoch hachrazat Hashem echad. In other words, for Rosh Hashanah, the focus of the malchut that we're declaring is God being the king, always and forever, and especially today on Rosh Hashanah, the coronation day. But the emphasis of Kabbalat Ol Malchut Shamayim in Kriyat Shema is dafka the Hashem Echad. So that if you forget to say Hashem Echad in Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, the fact that the resha of the pasuk contains this very idea that God is king, and you would think b'di'evad that would be enough to say that you recognize that you're the king, is not sufficient for the purposes of Kriya Shema.
Not sufficient for the purposes of Kriya Shema in terms? I mean, there are several aspects to the.
No, in other words, obviously it's not sufficient if you forget any one word in Kriyat Shema, like the same in Amidah. You skip a word, so you haven't davened. We've spoken about this many times.
No, so, I understand, but in Kriyat Shema, there's another point to it that you're not only being the Kabbalah Ol Malchut Shemayim, but your machri is the oneness of God.
Right. So obviously, if you leave out Hashem Echad, you haven't testified to God's oneness. But if you say Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu, you would think that would be enough, at least b'di'evid, to have fulfilled all Malchut Shemayim.
Why would that matter? You haven't fulfilled Kriyat Shema.
En achinami. It is the obligation of reciting all three paragraphs for Kriyat Shema. That's a dirabanan obligation through which we accomplish all types of things, as I said earlier. Right? In other words, if you say only the first paragraph of Kriyat Shema, and then you get interrupted, and you don't come back to it, so you didn't fulfill Zechirat Yetziat Mitzrayim, because you didn't get to the end. And you didn't fulfill your Torah obligation of Zechirat Yetziat Mitzrayim. And you also didn't fulfill your rabbinic obligation to recite this text called Kriyat Shema. But did you fulfill Kabbalat Ol Malchut Shemayim?
I don't want to dray it out, but I'm still trying to understand what difference does it make? I understand in by Shofar it makes a difference. I understand by Kriyat Shema, what difference does it make? What is the fact that omitting the last words isn't sufficient for Kriyat
Shema? So that's exactly his question.
You think that you can only say the first four words of Shema?
No, in other words, what is the obligation? What is the source that there's an obligation to recognize God's kingship? Ani Hashem Elokechem. How do we do that on a daily basis? By reciting the Pasuk Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. So I might think that Hashem Echad is ancillary to the fulfillment of saying, doesn't the idea contained in Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu, isn't that sufficient? B'di'evit, isn't that sufficient to be Mekabel Ol Malchut Shemayim? I'm declaring that he is our God.
It kind of reminds me of the thing you've quoted a number of times by the Rav about the difference between Zechariah Yetziat Mitzrayim and Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim, between like one time thing you have to do on night. Versus what you do all year, and there's also like what you, the one time you do on Rosh Hashanah versus what you do all year in Kriyat Shema.
Right. Right, although, interestingly, here it's hafuch, because the daily obligation has a higher requirement, because you have to include achdut as part of it. But the once-a-year requirement on Rosh Hashanah, you would think, does not need to require it, even though the pasuk is contained there. So just listen, Ben, your question will be answered here. Shekein ikar inyanahu ha'emuna b'hamamlacha atidit. Right, I would have thought that the main part of the pasuk Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad for the purposes of for the purposes of the daily Kriyat Shema, the daily Kabbalat Ol Malchut Shemayim, is in the beginning of the Pasuk, and not the end. But the truth is, if you leave out Hashem Echad, you have not fulfilled your obligation of Kabbalat Ol Malchut Shemayim on a daily level. Yan Berashi...
It's specifically talking about Hamlacha Atidit, or Hamlacha Atidak. In other words, it's... You are talking about what will be happening, whereas the Rosh Hashanah thing is talking about what's happening now. No?
Yeah, that's what he says here. Yuan Rashi bePerush Chumash al Pasuk Rishon de Kriyat Shema Shekatav Kishma Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu. This is Rashi on the Pasuk Musav al Hazman de Achshav. Right? Rashi says that it's connected to the here and now. V'siuma dekra d'Hashem Echad musav al ha'atid. Why is Hashem Echad talking about the future? V'heim heim advarim d'hamamlacha b'zman hazehu Hashem Elokeinu. V'zehu bi'ur ha'machloket shel t'nayim im yotzim malchut b'Rosh Hashanah b'kra d'shma Yisrael. And that's the machlokes that we had in our Gemara last time, about whether or not the pasuk of Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad is one of the 10 psukim of Malchiot. The Hasvara de Ein Yotzin, the opinion that holds you can't use Shema Yisrael as one of the psukim of Malchiot, he mishum de ikar inyano shel pasuk rishon de kriyat Shema hu sofa pasuk. What's the ikar of that pasuk? What's the ikar of Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad? Right. If I ask Pochazi Venir, ask people, give it to me. I'll regal Echad. Echad. Yeah, it's monotheism. Everybody knows that Shema is the declaration of monotheism. God is one. That the Ikar is one. So if the Ikar of the pasuk is the end, so then it's a pasuk about the laatid lavo. Why is Hashem Echad a pasuk about the laatid lavo?
Well, you have the famous pasuk in. Whatever, the pasuk we say all the time in conjunction with it, it's
like messianic vision. That in this world, even though of course objectively Hashem is one and his name is one,
it's not recognized. But
subjectively it's not recognized. It's not even, forget that it's not recognized by the Umot HaOlam. It's unfortunately not always even recognized by us. How? What do you mean it's not recognized by us? That's the Gemara. Rav Huttner later will quote. That's the Gemara in Brachot, and it appears in various places in the Gemara. But it's the Gemara at the end of Brachot. We you know the Daf Yomi. Remember Daf Yomi? Remember the days when the only thing in your Facebook feed was about Daf Yomi? It's changed. I got news for you. There's other headlines that have bumped it off the top of the Facebook feed. But at the end of the Daf Yomi, that's why the Gemara says there's two brachot. For good news, you say Baruch Hatov V'Hametiv. And for bad news, you say Dayan HaEmet. And the Gemara says why? Because we don't always recognize, or we don't sufficiently recognize that it's all from Hashem. I mean, it's not that we think, there's not like a dualistic idea that there's like a, that there's, you know, God, the good God does the good things and the bad God or the devil does the bad things. It's not like that. We know there's only one God. But we sometimes have trouble like keeping him all together. So in the future we'll recognize that it all comes from God. And we will only say Hatova Meitiv, even over bad news. But we have trouble understanding that the good stuff and the bad stuff, it's all the same. Because, look, it's so relevant to what we're going through right now. When you're the rat caught in the maze, and you don't have any idea where the exit is, or when you're going to get there, it's hard to make sense of things. So when you hear bad news, I mean, look, the truth is it's like a smoker, like the heavy smokers who before they get out of bed, before Negel Vasser and Modani, they light up. They have to, because they haven't smoked all night. They wake up with this craving from the nicotine. Sometimes it's the craving that gets them out of bed. that wakes them up in the morning. So they start smoking before they get out of bed. So we, thank God, are not smokers, but we're addicted to this. So the truth is, I never keep my phone next to my bed. I don't even bring it upstairs. But I wake up in the morning, and the first thing I do is I have to check my phone. Mostly, God forbid, out of this pachad, who every morning there's 4 or 5 death announcements on the phone of people that died while I was sleeping, Rahmana Litzlan. You know, I'm on so many different email lists, you know, from the here in our town, and you know, from the alumni of Yeshiva University, and this group and that group and this organization, all these different things that are all the different circles of my life. I get every day, Rahmana Litzlan, you're getting emails from people, and a lot of cases you know the people, they're people in your own life. So it's like this sense you have to feel. So we live in the world of Baruch Dayan HaEmes. We struggle to say that, like, God is running the world, he's the true judge, even though we can't understand it because we're the rat in the maze. That's the meaning of the Midrash in Kitisa, when Moshe asks to see God's face. And Hashem says, you can only see Achurai, you can only see me from behind. So there's a famous Yalkut Shimoni that says, it's obvious. What does it mean? God doesn't have a face, and he doesn't have a back of the head. And Moshe knew that. So what is he asking? So the Medrash is saying, you can only see me with hindsight. In other words, when you're in the midst of things, you can't process it. You can't understand it. Only with some hindsight. And hindsight takes a while to gain. It's not always the day after that you can understand things. Sometimes it's only in the long historical arc that you're able to look back. I'm mindful of the fact that today was Yom HaShoah. And sometimes only in the long historical arc are you able to look back and make sense of things. But in the moment, in the quarantine, you can't always, you know, see the forest for the trees. But latid lavo b'mot hamashiach, they'll only be hatov v'hametiv, because at that point we will have evolved spiritually such that we can recognize how God works. Even in the moment. So that's the point here. The machloket about whether or not Shema Yisrael is an appropriate pasuk for Malchiot, the man d'omar that said you can't use Shema Yisrael as a Malchiot pasuk, says, why not? Because Shema Yisrael is about Hashem Echad. It's not about right now. It's about a time of B'yoma Hu Yeh Hashem Echad U'Shmo Echad. Right? When the whole world will recognize it, and we'll recognize it, and we'll be able to put it into a kind of meaningful way to understand how the world works. But for Rosh Hashanah, what do you need? You need a pasuk about right now. You're talking about God is right now the Melech. That's the point of Rosh Hashanah. That we're not saying it's only going to be Bimot HaMashiach. We're saying we want the Melech now. We're making him the king right now. So a pasuk about the future would be problematic. V'siyum ze eino shayach l'malchiyut Rosh Hashanah. Then he goes on to say, V'afilu mi shecholek al ze v'sover de yotzim b'posuk rishon de kriyat shema. You see where I am? B'Torah de malchiyut de Rosh Hashanah. Hu mishum de sof sof nechlelet ba'ach kra gam hamlamacha shel hayom haze. So the other opinion, the opinion that does allow Shema Yisrael, which is after all the halacha l'maisa, says, okay, Hashem Echad is not the only thing. Right? I mean, we view it that way, but the pasuk also contains Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu. That's not insignificant. And as a matter of fact, it opens up the pasuk. So it says that's sufficient to make it connected to Hayom Hazeh, to this day. Shaharehu Omer Hashem Elokeinu, aval etzem ha-hanacha ki Hashem echad eino shayach lemalchut Rosh Hashanah hu davar muskam. Right? As the opposing opinion agrees in principle that Hashem echad is a statement about the future, but says that for the purposes of choosing a pasuk for Malchiot, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu, Sograyim Hashem Echad, is enough.
A question. So if I understand right, he's saying that basically in Rosh Hashanah we're supposed to be talking about the present, not necessarily the future.
Yeah.
But if you look at the rest of the psukim about on Malchiot, they almost all are talking about the future. Even the ones in the Torah are talking about Hashem Yimloch Le'olam Ve'ed and these messianic visions of they're talking about what's going to happen in the future. They're all future focus, not necessarily what's happening right now.
Yes, David, would you believe as I was preparing this, I knew you were going to ask that question. And I don't have an answer. I mean, Rav Huttner doesn't either. But you can like try to figure it out.
Is this idea, though, that it's about today, that's his Kiddush, or that's something that he's basing it on another, like this idea that Rosh Hashanah is about the present tense, that's his understanding, or that's something that's in the Gemara or something?
That seems to be...
It's from Bayom HaZeh.
Right, but in other words, you don't have to say that that's the kind of controlling, idea here. But Enachinami, this is what Rav Huttner says. In other words, but the idea also, he goes on to say, I'll say it on the outside, that the obligation of Rosh Hashanah is to be in this time, Biyom HaZeh, but to have an eye on eternity. In other words, to try to live in the world more according to the unified vision of Biyoma Hu Yeshem Echod Ushmo Echod. To recognize that it's all Echad now in this world, even though it's hard to do that. You know, we live in a world, it's like a funhouse mirror where reality is distorted. You know, like where you walk in and you walk into the funhouse mirror and you see two of you or three of you or four of you, even though there's only one of you. But the distortion field of the mirrors changes the reality as it's perceived, not as it really is. So that's the world we live in. We live in a world where we don't always experience God in the same way, in the happy moment and in the sad moment, in the time of tragedy and the time of joy. In the time of Dayan HaEmet and the time of, or the time of Hatova Metiv, the time of Dayan HaEmet and the time of Dayan HaEmet. So the challenge of Rosh Hashanah is to accept him as our king and to try every year, Letzamtzem Et Hapar, to try to reduce that distortion of reality. He also goes on to say that's why the continuation of Shema Yisrael immediately is Ve'ahavta. Because Ve'ahavta, right, and as the connection between God as Melech and Ve'ahavta is the combination of Yira and Ahava, which is necessary to kind of limit this gap. Right. In other words, it's not experience, you know, the God, the angry God, the God we ought to live in fear of, and the God that we love. Right. That to understand that these are the same, and to be able to maintain simultaneous emotional bonds, you know, is sometimes a challenge. That's the Mishnah, you know, it's Pirkei Avos now. So that's the second Mishnah in Avos, or the third Mishnah in Avos. Antigonus Ishsocho Omer Altie Kavadim Amishamshin Almanat Lakabel Pras. Don't be like the servants, you know, who are only working for reward, who only serve the master either to avoid punishment or to receive reward. So like I was talking to my son about this this morning actually. You're like, we're in this funny situation now. We're, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people are laid off, and a lot of people are obviously rethinking their professional futures. And you know, either they've been furloughed from work, or they've already been fired, or things like that. So like, you know, that usually creates a circumstance in which, you know, all you can do is think about the financial reality of your life. And, you know, very understandably, that often creates a circumstance where, you know, you can't think creatively in other ways. But sometimes, you know, if you can think, well, if I didn't have to earn a living, you know, there are two types of jobs, right? You know, there's a type of job that if tomorrow you won the Irish sweepstakes and you got $500 million. So there's certain people that would get up and go to work the next morning anyway, because their work was satisfying and creative and enjoyable.
Or they were elevator operators.
I mean, or they were in a job that they did it because
they simply enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, there's whatever your job. And there are two types of people, and it doesn't matter whether you're a scientist working in a laboratory cracking the codes of creation, or you're the elevator operator.
But yourself a definition was getting up in the morning and going to the job.
No, but no, you could be an elevator operator and feel that way about your job.
Sure.
And you can be the scientist cracking the codes who hates your job, and if you didn't have to work, you'd stop right away. But we understand that there are certain types of jobs we would maybe automatically classify as category A, and certain types of jobs we'd automatically classify as category B. But there are all types of people that would find satisfaction in different types of jobs. So there's certain people, if they won the sweepstakes, they'd get up and go to work anyway, because they were working for the joy of the work, for the sense of what they got out of it, and the salary was just what enabled them to do it. But now, if they don't need a salary, they would still continue their working. I would like to think if I didn't have to work, if I was wealthy and I didn't have to work, I would continue to teach, because I love teaching, and I do it, you know, not because of the Adarab, it's a shaila about how we could even take money for teaching, which is why I don't take money for teaching the Tuesday night shiur. There's just something, the dignity of the work. And then there are other things where if you didn't have to do it, you wouldn't do so. And as don't do it, in other words, we fulfill our obligations, right? We do mitzvot because we are mitzuvim, right? It's like the story we saw in the Ish Halacha, about the Gro. One year in Vilna, they didn't have, I think, hadassim. There were no hadassim mishulashim to be had in Vilna. You know, all of the, except for the aravot, the minim were very expensive. In 18th century, you know, Vilna and northern Poland, all of this stuff had to be imported from Turkey and Greece and wherever. They didn't have lulavim and etrogim and hadassim up there. So one year there were no, I think the Rav mentions it was hadassim to be found in Vilna. There were only a few sets of Arba Minim in all of Vilna. So there was this one very, very, very wealthy woman who had a set of Arba Minim, Ksherim. So the Gro, who was very poor, went to her and offered to buy her Arba Minim from her. And she said, "I will not sell it to you. I will give it to you as a gift on the condition that your schar mitzvah from the Gro, that the Gro's schar mitzvah of Netilas Lulav will be given, will be transferred to her account." So the Gro was delighted. He did it gladly. And he said, "Finally, I can do the mitzvah lishma without any, I do the mitzvah because I am mitzuveh, not because there's an ulterior motive of receiving reward."
Almanat
lekabel sachar. So then what does Antigonus Ishsocho say? So you should do that. You should do the mitzvot, not out of fear of punishment and not out of hope for reward, but because you are mitzuveh. But then he concludes, v'have more shamayim alechem. Right? You should have yirat shamayim. In other words, if we lived in a world where we were only motivated by ahava, right, that would be the ideal. But it would not exempt us from the requirement to still have yirat shamayim. right? That's just like you wanna serve God completely with no ulterior motives, which means that yirah, fear of punishment, or promise of reward, which lurks in the background, right? We also wouldn't want to serve God only out of ahava. You need to find the balance of the two, and that's reflected here. That's reflected here as well. But Rav Huttner says that's why Shema, the hemshech of Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, Kabbalat Ol Malchut Shamayim, is Ahavat Hashem ve'Avtat Hashem Elokeichem b'chol levavcha v'chol nafshecha. So that's Rav Huttner on this Gemara. So now the Mishnah continues. Where are we? Oh, it's late. Now the Mishnah continues. By the way, that's another thing that the Rav, perhaps one of the most enduring teachings of the Rav, about the inability to make sense of events as they're occurring to you. He says this in Kol Dodido Feik and elsewhere, that the inability, particularly in times of trauma and tragedy, such as our current moment, the question of how does God run the world and why is there human suffering is usually at best spiritually distracting, because it takes your eye off the ball of what should our response be. In other words, like if there's a debate, you know, like there was this, you know, I haven't seen it so much lately, but at the beginning of the corona, you saw all types of stupid things being said. You know, the corona is a punishment since God punishes Mida Keneged Mida, since we're all now at home and can't go to Minyan. Obviously, it's a punishment for the fact that, you know, frankly, we're not always so careful about getting to Minyan three times a day. So somebody that would say that, it creates a very serious theological problem. If you really think that, look, in other words, you could believe that there's a problem that people aren't careful about getting to Minyan three times a day. But the idea that God sent the corona in order to punish us for that, and therefore now we're all been, for 40 days we've been without Minyan, and how much more we'll appreciate it when we finally get back, it doesn't really explain why, you know, tens of thousands of Chinamen and Italians have to die. And it doesn't really explain why, at least according to the people that would say such a thing, who are not generally pushing the idea that women should be attending Minyan, why women would be affected. But beyond that, beyond this like huge, like theological hole that's created by making such a suggestion, well, there's a thousand different things you could point to and say corona is a punishment for X or for Y or for Z. But if you say, ah, it's a problem of Minyan attendance or fill in the blank, so then that lets us off the hook for everything else. If corona is a punishment for the fact that people aren't careful about going to Minyan, or talking during davening, or talking during Kriyas HaTorah, and therefore we can't go to shul, so then, but what about all the other possibilities that it is a punishment for? And you can kind of create a Mida Keneged Mida scenario for a whole variety of religious shortcomings. But by pointing to one thing, so it lets us off the hook for everything else. And instead of really kind of creating an impetus for tshuva, it blocks off the kind of cheshbon nefesh that's required for a real moment of tshuva. So the Rav says that kind of thinking, the Holocaust happened because of this, or Hurricane Katrina happened because of that. Yeah, and in each Bechol Dor Vador, there are people that are willing to point to these things and offer up the Se'er La'Azazel and say, this was the problem. So the Rav says that's spiritually distracting, because our energy should be focused on you know, on other things. If my neighbor is sick with the corona and he needs someone to bring him groceries, so, well, what if I've never seen him at Minyan? What if I only see him in shul on Shabbos, but never during the week? So obviously, according to that opinion, Magilo, why should I go out of my way to bring him groceries? He's enduring his Yisurin. It's spiritually distracting to say such things. And that's this has all been a little off track, but it's Minyan Ediyoma. The Mishnah says, Ha'over lefnei ateva biyom tov shel Rosh Hashanah, the chazin on Rosh Hashanah, hasheni matkia. The second shliach tzibur, meaning the shliach tzibur of Musaf, is the one who blows the shofar.
What does that phrase mean?
On the holiday of Rosh Hashanah.
Why did I just say Rosh Hashanah?
The festival of Rosh Hashanah, the Yom Tov, the holiday of Rosh Hashanah. I don't know. I hear your question. Why? I don't know. You can look at the Mefarshei Mishnah. Why? Ha'over lifnei ateva biyom tov shel Rosh Hashanah hasheni matkia. The second chazan, meaning the chazan from Musaf, is the one who blows the shofar. That doesn't mean necessarily that the chazan is the one. As a matter of fact, that's our minog, is that we don't let the chazan also be the bal tokeya. But it means that the tekiat shofar is in Musaf. It's not in Shacharit. Uveshat ha-halel, harishon makriyat ha-halel. And when there's halel, which obviously is not on Rosh Hashanah, the Gemara will take that up, but when there's halel, the halel is recited by the Baal Shachris. As you could, look, that's, it's actually a little strange. What do we normally do on a regular Shabbos? You remember a regular Shabbos? Think back to the last time you went shul on Shabbos. When is the switch off between the chazan of Shacharis and the chazan of Musaf?
During Kriyat HaTorah.
Right, after Kriyat HaTorah, so then the Baal Musaf takes over. On Rosh Hashanah, when is the handoff? What?
After, yeah.
In other words, there's all this, like Ashrei. There's Ashrei on a regular Shabbos is said by the Baal Musaf. And on Rosh Hashanah, it's still part of Shacharit, because the Baal Musaf wants to start with the Anenu. Right? There's that dramatic entrance. Right? The Aneni. That hinini hani me'at, but it's not clear. Why is the Baal Musaf? Maybe the Baal Shachris should be the guy that puts the Sefer Torah back. And there are some communities where that's the minug. You're like, we're makpid that the guy that did psicha is also the one that's standing there to open the aron when the Torah gets put back. Right, you know, and it happens sometimes that a guy got psicha before Kriyas HaTorah, and then there was Kriyas HaTorah, and sometimes Misha Berachs and all types of other things. Sometimes the rabbi speaks, and sometimes there's a bar mitzvah, and they throw candies and whatever it is. And by the time they're putting the Sefer Torah back, the guy that got psicha, 45 minutes earlier, he forgot about it, or he's in the lobby, and the gabbai gets very nervous. You have to find the guy who did psicha in order to open the aron to put the sefer back. Why? Because we have an idea of ha-matchil ba-mitzvah omrim lo gmar. Right? But if you start a mitzvah, you finish the mitzvah. But the Chazan is different. There's the guy who physically took out the Sefer, the guy who took it, carried it to the Bima, he's the Baal Shachris, and the guy who puts it back is the Baal Musaf. Really, maybe it should be that the Baal Musaf only takes over once you get to the Amida. So it's not at all clear where these divisions are. So Tkiyat Shofar, that's part of the Baal Musaf. And Hallel is for the Baal Shachris. Okay, so the Gemara says, Maishna Sheni Matkiya. Right? So what's different? Like, why is there a value that Tkiyat Shofar be part of Musaf? Like, what might it have been? Why do these psukim, like, what's the Havamina here? We would have blown Shofar and Shachris? So, but what about those psukim? The idea that you blow Malchiot, Zichronot, and Shofrot. Senachinami. You could have said Malchiot, Zichronot, and Shofrot as part of Shachris. So the Mishnah, so the Gemara says, Maishna Sheni Matkiya. Mishum d'berov am hadras melech. The idea that it's all things being equal, it's better to do mitzvot in front of a large crowd. So isn't this shocking? Even in the days of Chazal, there were people who didn't come to shul on time. Right? You ever look around sometimes? A shachris? You know, like even, I don't mean like who's there for brachos. Although now, you know, now we're doing at least in Mishkan Tzipora, the Shachris Minyanim start at Yishtabach. Like, in order to find a way to, under the new guidelines of only 19 people davening together, in order to letzamtzem katzat so that people are exposed a little less. So you say brachos and karbonos, and you're supposed to say karbonos. Brachos and karbonos and psuke de zimra on your own cheshbon. You no longer have, it's adarab, it's better. Except for the people that want to say Kaddish before Baruch Shomar, it's better. Because always you have the excuse, I couldn't really say Karbonos, they daven too fast. So now you don't have that excuse. Because whatever time Yishtabach is, you just count backwards, T minus however many minutes you need to say Baruchos and Karbonos and Psukei de Zimra, and you get there for Yishtabach and Baruchu.
Yeah, imagine all the people have been saying Karbonot for the past month.
Yeah. Yeah, think about it. That's it. Only in that schut, only in the schut of since we've all been davening biyachidus and you can say Karbonos as long as you want, only in that schut have we been sustained during this. Imagine how bad it would be without that.
Yeah.
So even in the times of Chazal, they understood more people are going to be in shul for Musaf than for the beginning of Shachris. So Berovam Hadras Melech. So the Gemara asks, obviously, V'ihochi Halel Nami Neima B'Sheni. So also said, say Halel after, right? Mishum de Berovam Hadras Melech. Right? So in other words, if you want to always do things with a bigger audience, so then why does Halel suffer and is assigned to the Baal Shachris? I think there were, I remember Dave Walk telling me, there were like in New York or places where they had like the famous chazonim of old. There were chazonim who would, you know, the chazon would always daven Musaf. Musaf was the show. And they'd get somebody else to daven Shachris. But the chazon for Musaf, meaning the star chazon, would sometimes take over for Halil, which is against the din here in the Gemara. So Ela Maishna Halel de Berishon Mishum Dizrizin Magdimin LeMitzvot. So why is Halel made earlier? Because of Zrizin Magdimin LeMitzvot. It's, you know, people that have a little zeal, they try to do the mitzvot as early as possible. So Manavshach, the question goes back. So Tkianami Navi Berishon Mishum Dizrizin Magdimin LeMitzvot. So if it's better, all things being equal, to do mitzvot earlier, so then let's also do Tkiyat Shofar in Shachrit in order to be Mekayim Zrizin makdim el mitzvot. So Amar Rabbi Yochanan b'shat gzeirat hamalchut shanu. No, it's a historical case which you're probably familiar with. That Tosfos here explains it. Here, let me make this bigger. B'shas gzeres hamalchut shanu, the halacha that musaf, that shofar is sounded as part of musaf, was because of a historical case of a persecution. Va'af al pi shabat la gzeret hamalchut lo avdinan. And even though that particular persecution has passed away, we have not lo avdinan kidmi ikara. We didn't put it back to the original practice, which was apparently to say the shofar as part of shacharit. Afal gav dezrizin makdim lemitzvot. Dechayshinan shema yachzor davar lekil kulo. Because maybe that same danger which caused us to make the change will come back one day. Ulefeirusha Yerushalmi nichatfe demefareh sham shedamu haoyvim shenitasvu litkoa truat milchama. So what was the case? The Goyim, whoever it was, the Persians or the whatever it was, heard the shofar early in the morning and thought it was a call to war. They thought the Jews were gathering to make a milchama. So they went in and slaughtered them all. Va'amdu aleihem v'hargum. V'lakach tiknu tkiyat u'brachot b'musaf. And that's why Chazal moved it to Musaf. Because a little bit later in the day, the chichazu dekaru b'kriyat shma umitpalalin v'korin b'torah v'chozrin umitpalalin v'tokin amru b'nimusayhu inon askinan klum b'chukoteyem uv'toratam. Now, as they understood, since it was later in the day and they saw that they'd already spent a few hours in shul davening, they realized, oh, it wasn't an early morning wake-up call to war. It was part of their religious customs and services, and therefore there was no fear of another pogrom coming and killing them. I do not know. I assume that this has been researched to try to determine what is the actual historical antecedent here, if at all. But that's the idea, that you want to wait a little bit. You don't want to do shofar at the crack of dawn. It's a question about like the Vasikin minyan on Rosh Hashanah. Right, that the Vasika minyan, you still end up davening and blowing shofar a little bit early, but it's not exactly at dawn. But if you blew shofar in shacharit, when would you be blowing shofar at the Vasika minyan? At the crack of dawn, and therefore, that's to be avoided. So, Lamaisa, nobody's machmir not to go to an early minyan or go to a vasika. Adarabba, people prefer vasikin on Rosh Hashanah. But that's when you're davening, that's when you're blowing the shofar in the musaf and not in the shacharit. Is that, did we get to the end of that line in the Gemara? Since we're not rushing to Maariv, let's take another 2 minutes just to finish until the Mishnah. If that's okay. Midika Omar Bishat Halel Michlal de Rosh Hashanah Leka Halel. In other words, the Mishnah has two parts to it. The first part about what time to say Tekiyat Shofar, and the second part, what time to say the Halel. So it says b'shat ha-halel. Maybe, David, that's the response to your question. It creates a linguistic parallel. Yom Tov shel Rosh Hashanah and Shat Halel. Maybe it's a linguistic, for the lyricism of the way the Mishnah is phrased. To create the parallel. B'yom Tov Rosh Hashanah and Shat Halel. So if the next says B'shat Halel, obviously we know that there is no Halel on Rosh Hashanah. There is no Hallel on Rosh Hashanah. So the Mishnah is talking about, and at other times, on other Yomim Tovim, on Rosh Chodesh, on other Yomim Tovim, when there is Hallel, then the Shliach Tzibur of Shacharis takes over. My Taima, so what's the reason there's no Hallel on Rosh Hashanah? Omer Rabbi Abahu, Omer Amru, Malachei Asharet Lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono Shel Olam, Mipnei Ma'ein Yisrael Omim Shira Lefanecha B'Rosh Hashanah U'V'Yom HaKippurim. The angels asked with a certain accusation in their voice, why don't we say Hallel? Why don't we recite the Shira, the praise, on Rosh Hashanah and Yom HaKippurim? Amar lehem efshar melech yoshev al kisei din v'sifrei chayim v'sifrei metim p'tuchim lefanav v'yisrael omrim Shira? Question mark, explanation point. Shira, Hallel, is not the right mood for Rosh Hashanah and Yom HaKippurim, which are, after all, about din. So it's just not, even though we're obligated to praise and extol, thank and exalt God, nevertheless, when you're there in the Bet Din, being judged for your life and the life of your community and the life of the whole world, Hallel is not the right mood to strike. Okay, we'll end there. Maybe next week we'll all be together, and if not, we'll meet here on Web Yeshiva. I hope everyone's healthy. Bye. Don't forget to count the Omer.